Hi, I'm Susan Moore, Community Engagement Manager with IIBA.
And I'm Scott Bennett, Manager of Business Analysis with the International Institute of Business Analysis.
And this is Business Analysis Live.
So the BBC conference, Susan, you were there. What was it like on the ground?
Oh gosh, it was energizing. We had, you know, about 50% of the attendees had never been to a BBC before. So there were a lot of folks that were really interested in engaging with others, learning, meeting our guest today to learn more about the book. So it was really an exciting time in Orlando last week.
Yeah, that's great. So the book is called Future Proof, and it's about AI and business analysis. We're going to dig into this with the two authors. So one of them is in Australia, so he couldn't join us because it's middle of the night. But today we've got with us Angela Wick. Welcome, Angela.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
Hello, Angela. Well, we're so excited that you can join us today. Tim is going to join us. We've got a way that we're able to include him in today's session. Angela, I feel like we don't necessarily need to introduce you, but for those folks that might be seeing you for the first time, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hello, everyone. Angela Wick. I am broadcasting here from Santa Barbara, California. Been an IIBA member since, gosh, probably 2006, and CBAP since like 2007. So been around for a long time in the IIBA community. Started my BA career in the 90s and done all kinds of things in business analysis, many roles around it, BA manager, consulting, trainer, et cetera. And today, a lot of people know me from LinkedIn Learning and BAcube.com.
Yeah. And now we'll add author. Although you've done some writing before, it's not like this is your first book. That's right. I've also got my copy. So this is a really exciting book. I know we're going to talk more about it. So Scott, last week, in addition to launching Future Proof, we also launched Analysis Everywhere, which is another campaign that we have going on. Yeah.
That's right. So I'm going to do a little magical trick here.
Here we go. Let's try some magic. Angela, we're going to include you. Okay.
So the campaign really is to raise awareness about business analysis. So the question that we're asking people with their orange ping pong ball, the I off of IIBA, is where do you practice analysis outside of work? So I am a YouTuber. You see this sign behind me here. This is my plaque. I do furniture repair. And in furniture repair, I'm always problem solving. I'm always figuring out what the problem is, what the root cause of the problem is, being creative and how to solve the problem. So that's where I use analysis outside of work. So now what we're going to do is pass this over to Susan.
Oh, okay.
Susan, where do you use analysis outside of work?
You know what? I do volunteer work for my local alumni chapter. And so I use my business analysis skills in helping to set up events and do email marketing. It doesn't sound like business analysis skills, but I am really using business analysis skills. All right. So Angela, I'm going to pass this to you. Are you ready? Here we go. Let me see. Here we go. Oh, right there. Oh, there we go.
All right. Where's the little IIBA logo on there? There we go. I would say do business analysis work when playing pickleball. Any pickleball fans out there? I am constantly analyzing the game, my shots, what can improve, what can I do to improve, and how do I continuously improve?
That's fantastic.
Excellent.
So the hashtag for this is Analysis Everywhere. This is something you can participate in. Last week when we were live 2 weeks ago, we actually gave out the ping pong balls. They're being shipped to those participants that responded within the hour. So we've got a number of responses that people will be getting those around the world. So we had someone from the UK, Australia, US, Canada, a few other countries. So it was neat to see that global response to this.
Yeah. So make sure when you get your ball, make sure that you share it on LinkedIn. Tell people your story. Where do you practice analysis outside of work? Well, so it was a busy week, but let's talk about this book, because that was really, I think, a centerpiece of BBC last week. Not only the keynote speaker talked about AI, but you and Tim also did a launch and a talk. Maybe start there. Start a little bit about that talk that you guys gave.
Sure. The talk we gave was centered around the concepts of the book and book here. And Tim and I wore our matching t-shirts.
Which was the hit of BBC, by the way, because it totally looks like a album cover.
It is. It's so cool. It's so cool. Yeah. Everyone wants a t-shirt. There's kind of three themes that I think come out in our talk and in the book. And that is the urgency of business analysis in an AI environment, a framework that Tim and I have put into the book on how to think about analysis in an AI-driven world. And that really got a lot of interesting comments and feedback after our session. We were really quite enthralled with all the talk about the framework. And it's a framework that integrates in as a thinking framework. It's not like throw away other frameworks. And then the skills and the upskilling needed as our work in business analysis has to level up in order to participate effectively in an AI-driven world.
Well, it was an interesting read. I've read through the book. I know Susan has as well. And because we couldn't get Tim with us here live, because it is the middle of the night in Australia, we actually pre-recorded a session. So why don't we watch that together, and we can come back and continue to read through it. Now, for our live audience today, please put your questions or comments in, because we will be getting to those at the session, so we can pick Angela's brain and get to all your questions. So what we'll do right now is show the video we had with Tim, and then we'll come back. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on the new book.
Thanks a lot, Scott. And hi, Suzanne, as well.
Hello. Nice having you here today, by the way.
Yeah, great to be here. It's early morning, so I've had my my first coffee and ready to kick the day off here in on the not-so-sunny Gold Coast in Australia.
Excellent.
That's great. So, Tim, question for you, just as we start off and people get to know you, can you tell people a little bit about your background and sort of what inspired you to write a book like this?
Yeah, look, I really fell into business analysis. So it's something that came to me, and I got a great opportunity to work in 18 countries around the world and experience business analysis in different settings. And I guess around about 13 years ago, I met Angela and worked on the IABA competency model with Angela. And we met for the first time in 2023 in BBC. And we just said, somebody should be writing about this stuff. And I guess the someone was Angela.
Why
and
not
I.
us?
Yeah.
Well, it's a really exciting book. And I think it positions business analysis really at the center of what's going on with AI. And I know you think a lot about organizations and leaders. So, you know, if you were to talk to a group of leaders about AI, why would you tell them that it's important to understand good business analysis, you know, as AI is coming?
Well, I think the key thing with it is that, you know, leaders have an incredible number of pressures all at them at the moment. McKinsey's have done a report, and that they said that in 1958, organizations lasted 61 years. Today, they're saying that is now 18 years. So, you know, I own a consulting business that just specializes in business analysis. We've been around for 20 years. So if really at the moment, if it says 18 years, well, we're past our expiry date. So I think leaders need to do something different. They need to be proactive and reactive with changes within the marketplace, and they need to be reinventing the organization at an incredible pace. I think every CEO does business analysis, and many people within their organization perform business analysis. So they do things such as creative thinking, problem solving, analysis, synthesis. They certainly do root cause analysis when things go wrong. And they do all of these activities because they're trying to solve problems or take advantage of opportunities. But do they call it business analysis? I don't think they do. I think they do it, but they just don't recognize that they're doing business analysis. So in this pressure economy that we move ourselves into, I think the key thing is that business analysis is the link between making sure that technology such as AI is being introduced in such a way that it works for the business. It doesn't just speed up all of the mistakes within the business. And I think the key thing that we need to really move to in the world is understanding some of the ethical components that sit with introducing something such as AI.
This book also gets a little bit into the competencies that are needed as well.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Where we see is that the competencies that are associated with the next phase of business analysis are really going to change. They're not going to, you know, they're still the competencies, which are the core competencies of business analysis, but the intensity and the pace of those competencies, and I guess what we're saying is the level of those competencies is really going to rise. And this is a great thing for business analysis, is we have a great golden opportunity to showcase what's been around for many, many years, but has been in a subconscious format. And this is about raising it to make it conscious within organizations and giving them the template for success.
So, Tim, when you're talking about the pace of business, agility, like if you sort of look at the model from the 50s compared to now, business is moving much, much faster. So yeah. I think I'm summarizing this, correct me if I'm wrong. Business is moving faster. We've now got this AI introduction. So what we used to do perhaps 10, 15 years ago as business analysis professionals is very different in terms of what's coming ahead. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, what's happening in business is vastly different. So the what practices we would have done 30, 40 years ago are totally different to practices now. We have moved to a real software economy. You know, if somebody had told me that four out of the top 10 market cap companies were going to be led by software developers, I would have gone, you're crazy. Now, that'll never happen. But, you know, that's what's happened is yeah. We've had four very successful companies all led by software developers. And I think what that points to me to is that that's about managing your software delivery lifecycle. So developers have taken that over to deliver the software development lifecycle. And that's why they've been very, very successful, because they've been able to manufacture really good working software that customers adapted and have really, I guess, had great success with using software. As we move to that, you can't just replicate that and run organizations all by, you know, incredibly talented software developers. Maybe you can. I don't know. but to me, what you've got to do is then replicate what they got, or what success they got, which is replicating a really good working delivery lifecycle. And this is where I think business analysis really comes to the forefront. And it's about connecting strategy right the way through to delivering what we're trying to deliver out to customers. Some of the really detailed traditional tasks that we've been doing as business analysts are no longer going to be around. Detailed technical specifications, they're not going to be done by BAs, because we'll have a tool that will do it much faster than than what we can do it. We'll need to validate it, though, because there will be an incredible amount of validation that will come within our profession.
Well, things are moving fast, so thank you for kind of setting the stage. I think that helps us to think how these skills that we have are going to be important to organizations. So thanks, Tim. All right. Well, that's quite a bit to think about there. You know, the one thing that I take away from that, you know, from Tim's interview we just did, and also what you guys have been talking about, is the competencies of the future. And actually, we've already got a question about this. And I think this is probably a good place to start. So I'm going to share Angelica's question. Can you explain the changes you see coming for the business analysis competencies? Can you give examples? And the other part of my question was, I know that you and Tim worked on the business analysis competency model for IIBA. So was that part of what was informing your view of the competencies that would have to change?
That's like a compound question, Susan.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. About a third of the book talks about competencies. And it's a really, really big theme, of course, and something near and dear to Tim and I's heart as we worked on the competency model for IIBA. And really, what the biggest theme with competencies is that they're going to level up. And that was a theme as well when we worked on the competency model, that facilitation skills, for example, at a very beginner level, can you make sure an agenda gets followed and chaos doesn't break out with a group of users, for example? But at a much higher level, you might be facilitating really high stakes decisions with a group of senior leaders. Those are two very different levels of skill in facilitation, for example. So now in a world of AI, I want us to think about things like, well, when our development is happening so much faster because software development teams are using AI to write the code and automate the tests and document things, well, what's left? Decision-making and facilitating decision-making. So now we have decision velocity at play, and we now have to use our facilitation skills, analysis skills, people skills, influence skills to prepare people to make decisions at a velocity unseen before. And that encompasses not only our underlying competencies, but our analysis skills as well. So the validation that Tim talked about, for example, we can't just look at something that's automated from AI and go, yep, looks good, right? It's like, wait, how are you going to determine it looks good?
Right.
It already has all the knowledge. So it's not like your existing system and business knowledge is going to help very much. It already used all of that from the AI. But your judgment, your knowledge of strategy, your understanding from the stakeholders of what bets, what hypotheses, assumption, and bets we're making, that this aspect is actually going to make a strategic difference in the user's behavior and in the strategic realm of what we're doing compared to other things and other goals that we have. That judgment and analysis of the details all the way through the big picture and the skills needed to do that, whether that be critical thinking, facilitation skills, ethics, decision-making, and our traditional analysis skills. By that, I mean things like truly understanding the linkage between strategy, user behaviors, and requirements information. Things like users, actors, user groups, the actions they take, the data they use to take those actions, the business rules they use, and the different alternate paths to get through the different scenarios that they have to get through. None of that is technical.
That's right.
All of it is needed to validate what's happening with AI and the technology. So if you're a BA right now that does a lot of technical spec work or writes requirements from a technical lens, you have the biggest change. Right.
Yeah, and as I read through the book, Angela, I'm glad you described it that way, because that's what I thought I was picking up as it went through, is that in my role as a business analysis professional, I'm going to be operating more in the strategic space and understanding, connecting how strategy is driving results instead of getting buried into the weeds of how maybe a specific system is working and behaving. Because you outlined very clearly in the book that that stuff can now be done in much faster, leaner ways, that we don't need to focus our energy there. We as human beings working with other human beings, our value is moving up that value chain.
Yes, exactly. So the value chain is really about, if we can, for example, do 50 times more projects in the future with AI, that means there's 50 times the decisions to be made. And many BAs will complain that their stakeholders don't make decisions fast enough. And I would argue that's up to us to get the right information and analysis done so they can make a decision faster.
Right.
So I know it's like, wow, this kind of explodes into some very complex elevated competencies, to kind of put a pin on the competency question.
I think this introduces, maybe it reintroduces is the better word, analysis, maybe as it was always intended to be practiced within organizations. I know that's one of the foundational concepts of this book. We kind of talked about it as, oh, it's a renaissance of business analysis, because I think the intention always was that business analysis was really happening more at the strategy level, helping organizations to decide where they're going to go and the outcomes they want to achieve. Maybe talk a little bit about, I feel like we already have talked about that. Never mind. That was just an observation.
No, it's true. When I do explain the book and the concepts to, you know, other folks in the industry that maybe teach business analysis and speak about it, they're like, well, isn't that how it's always supposed to have been done? And so what are we talking about? We're talking about themes like continuous analysis. So there's a huge chunk of the book that says, hey, analysis is not a phase. It was never meant to be one. So if you think of or have your experience or lens of analysis as just a phase of a project, that's a very misguided way of thinking about business analysis. And with AI, it's going to become even more misguided as we move into an AI-driven world, right? And then using data. And with AI, again, data and data analytics are going to become so much more important for us to understand. That doesn't mean we all need technical data skills. I mean, understand what data means to users and business leaders, and how to facilitate those conversations and leverage data and evidence to drive what we do next. So instead of going to your stakeholder and saying, what are your requirements, which is never, we know has never been a good practice, think about gathering your evidence from AI curated data that shows you how to recommend a direction to your stakeholders, and using that as a foundation of conversation, of decision-making, of what to do next. So really we're talking from the BABOK perspective about solution evaluation and monitoring knowledge area as becoming much more in the forefront of our practice, rather than what many consider traditional elicitation techniques.
Yeah.
There still be a need for elicitation skills and techniques, but at a higher level, and using your evaluation and monitoring skills and data to inform and collaborate and integrate with that. Does that resonate?
It doesn't. You know, my next question for you is how does what you and Tim were thinking about and putting into this book, how does it connect back to the business analysis body of knowledge? Do you feel like with the use of AI, does it change a lot of that? Does it enhance that?
Such an interesting question. And you know, the answer really depends on what glasses you're wearing when you're reading the BABOK. As someone who is on the core team for BABOK version 3, we spent painstaking amounts of time and discussing how to make the BABOK something that will live into the future. And so when I hear someone say, hey, the BABOK's really outdated, it's all waterfall, my response as an author on the code of the team of the BABOK is, well, that might be because that's how you're reading it. If you write, like, it doesn't say that a document must be created. It doesn't say you must have requirement states. It says these are concepts to help you manage and facilitate the process. Hmm. So I think, you know, even the most agile person can read it and think it's very agile. Apply it in AI, but I really beg you to read the BABOK from a lens of wait a second, am I reading it and putting my own filter on it? Or am I looking outside the box when I read it? Because we were so careful how we phrased things, right? And, yeah, and so careful about that. So the idea of solution monitoring and evaluation is a huge concept, and the solution needs to be at least partially built to do that. That could be one sprint of work, as long as we're following those agile ways of working, of actually releasing something that's usable, right? So again, I think to answer your question, Susan, it really depends on the filters you're looking at the BABOK through, and challenging our own filters of that.
Yeah. So it's all about context.
Yeah, for sure.
Scott.
Yeah, I was just sort of thinking through that. And I look at the BABOK guide as something that's more of the what versus the how. I think some people confuse it with a how-to guide. How do I do this? And that's not really what it's there for.
Right.
It's
a guide to the body of knowledge is a guide and summary of all of the knowledge out in the universe of business analysis, right? It's a bibliography of hundreds and hundreds of books, and it includes thoughts from thousands of people in there. It's not one directive.
Yeah, working across all kinds of SDLCs or business versus technology. Yeah, it's really kind of the big picture of business analysis.
Yeah. So Angela, tell us a little bit about the framework that's in the book so that people can understand what a framework is, because they might be thinking agile or something else.
Yeah.
How does that relate?
So the AI accelerator framework in the Future Proof book was designed to help us think through and understand how analysis actually fits into everything else that's happening, including business results, the software development lifecycle, and the assets you create as a business analyst. So it's not meant to replace any other framework that anyone's using. It's meant to help us as BAs think about our work. So it starts with assets. Assets are the things you already create, but we're saying these assets are continuous and living, durable things that you use constantly and continuously to facilitate decision-making, conversations, and analysis that you're doing in an AI world. It's the who, what, when, why of the organization. It's everything from business architecture to business process models to your business rules. A lot of the things we already use as BAs. These assets help us work fast and with pace because we don't have to start them from scratch every single time in a phase. So we're not saying that requirements phases go away. We're saying we are going to be better off with continuous analysis and to not think of analysis as a phase, but to continuously look at how solutions are performing, how users are performing, and use the data and assets to inform our decisions going forward. The next step is hypotheses and experiments. The foundation of fast-moving, complex tech is all about hypothesis and experiments. And BAs should be at the forefront of defining and creating value-driven hypotheses and experiments that align to strategy. Now let's go to the top of the pyramid that's in the book, and that is business results. We are gonna show you how to link business results to user behaviors, which then link to your deliverables, tasks, and team activities. So you've got the whole spectrum of assets that you work on from an analysis perspective, hypotheses and experiments, team tasks and activities, deliverables, which those deliverables create change user behaviors. Those change user behaviors then create business results. So we're linking the entire value chain of analysis from very detailed things teams do all the way to the business strategy.
And by the way, that diagram, this book has really great graphics. So I know that was done by our in-house graphics team. Good job to that. Yeah, I was going to say, here it is. That's what that, there you go. So that's the picture that that Angela is describing. And that's the AI accelerator framework. I know, Angela, you did just a quick overview of that. You and Tim have a couple of webinars coming up where you're going to go into a little bit more detail about some of these concepts. We've got a public webinar that's coming up at the end of June. And then we've also got a member webinar, actually, where you're going to go more into that accelerator framework. And so, Roslyn, if you want to drop in those links, we're starting to take registrations for both of those now. Yeah. Do we want to move over? We've got some questions and some comments from our viewers. All right. Let's see. Oh, I think, so here's, so this was, Carrie said, I apply business analysis to help my husband restore classic cars. That's pretty cool. Business analysis, life skills. It's just good life skills. So great job, Carrie. Let's see. Next question here. Oh, this is a comment. Oh. Angela Sampson can hear you speak about business analysis concepts every day. All right. So let's see. Maybe what? Let's try this one. What are the expected outcomes of combining AI and insightful business analysis? So Mazan is really asking. So that's part of the subtitle of this. What are some of the expected outcomes?
Just better business outcomes, right? And when a BA is in that role doing it, which we believe is the role positioned to do this, a lot more value that BAs are providing. So yeah. Definitely better business outcomes, which means we're making decisions faster, delivering faster, and not just delivering faster, but with value, which ultimately means a better space in the market from a competition perspective.
Yeah, so those organizations that today are putting the premium on business analysis professionals producing deliverables, they will probably not be amplifying their agility. They'll just kind of be doing what's been done in the past. They probably won't see the outcomes.
Well, I mean, let's think about, they might. It just depends, right? It depends on what those deliverables are for and what the focus is. So if those deliverables are for the purpose of high velocity decision making, right? But what I agree with you on, Susan, is most of the time, those deliverables, they lose sight of what they're actually for. And the focus is more on the document than the purpose, and it loses its value then, right?
Yeah, but you bring up a great point, because it's really, organizations should be assessing the deliverables that are being produced so that it really does lead to the outcomes. It's not just, we have a template, we fill it out. That's just what we do. So,
right.
So this next one actually, I think, is a follow-up to the statement that you made earlier about analysis as a phase going away. So Kirsten says step two is removed, the analysis phase.
Well, what's step two? I don't.
What is step two?
So I'm going to first challenge, what does step two mean? And whoever said there was a step two, but no, probably right in Kirsten's mindset, there's step one, step two, elicitation, analysis. And I'll argue, and even in the BA Bach, elicitation and analysis are an iterative thing. They were never, even in the BA Bach, a phase.
Yeah.
So, so anyone that thinks analysis is a phase, I'm just going to throw out there the challenge that it never was meant to be. And the BA Bach doesn't mention that, hasn't, you know, it tends to be a project management driven concept that analysis is a phase. That's not a business analysis concept.
Yeah.
So I think that's a misguided thing that's happened over time.
We've been talking a little bit about the Babbock Guide today and maybe some of the misconceptions about it. I know you've done a series of talks with some of the original group that created it, which gives history on the kinds of decisions that you guys made about it. And it is a fascinating set of conversations, because it helps you to understand how that body of knowledge was developed. So great information. Let's see. All right. How about, okay, so I'm going to stop for a second. Scott, I need to go check more comments. How about you ask some questions while I'm looking through these?
Yeah. So Angela, when someone's right now thinking and hearing this, you talk in the book about upskilling. Can you talk a little bit about what that is, what people should be looking to work towards as we're working in this new era, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really important to upskilling right now is the concept of really broadening what we mean by upskilling. And it, to me, this means really seeking out examples to follow in these skills, collaborating with folks at different levels to learn from each other. So kind of like a social learning, mentoring, coaching, not just classes. Because classes are only, if you look at like a skill development model, and we talk about this in the book, a course is just the bottom level. You don't have the skill until you've actually practiced. So what do you need to practice that skill and get successful at it? You've got to have people that can give you feedback, people to observe and learn from. You've got to apply it in different contexts and different levels of complexity to get really good at it And you've got to repeat, 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 where you're getting that repetition in different contexts. So you're seeing it's not exactly the same every time I do it. And you start to get good judgment happening. So I can't understress enough the idea that skill building is about doing, right? Doing and seeking out different frames of reference and different opportunities to do things. So definitely, whether it's in your real life, in your work life, in your volunteer life, in your life networking on LinkedIn or at IIBA, just keep pushing the boundaries of doing and practicing to elevate skills.
I use an equation to teach people skills, and that is knowledge plus experience equals a skill. If you don't have the experience, you can't build the skill. So gaining knowledge is only one part of that equation.
It's a very small part. You know, and some people have a lot of skill building from doing and they don't have the knowledge. They've never maybe taken a formal course.
Yeah.
And it can be just enlightening then when they do. So both are part of the equation, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we have a few more questions, Susan?
Yeah, here's one. I'm going to try to summarize this one. This is Giacomo's question. It's a little bit long, so let me try to summarize for you. So the question here is about business analysis professionals changing their mindset about AI. And so here he suggests, I believe AI would necessitate a much more hypothesis creation, proof of concept, fast fail approach versus maybe what sometimes we do in SDLC world, which is we just solution. So what do you think about how business analysis professionals should approach AI in their work?
100% agree. Hypothesis and experiments, right? Proof of concept, fail fast. That's a whole nother discussion for me. I've got some kind of yes and no angles on that, but it's definitely whatever the focus is with that. It's about learning and testing our assumptions fast. And so we have to start understanding the linkage to strategy, test those assumptions about that linkage, bring that data back to our leaders for decision-making, and really create that link. And that link, the missing link, are those hypotheses and user behaviors. We think that if we do this in a system, users will then do this more or do this less. And if those user behaviors happen, then we get more sales or less cost or whatever that business result is. It's really linking all of that together is the mindset shift that those who make that shift will be wildly successful as AI becomes more dominant.
And I remember reading something in the book, a comment about, I'm going to get this wrong, but something around really focus and obsess on the problem, not the solution.
Oh, of course.
I'm not sure if I got that right.
I don't remember the quote either. I mean, there's like 55,000 words in that book.
That's right. So, but those sound like some good words used. And even, you know, the
like
keynote
we might have said.
Yeah, the keynote speaker at BBC last week said the most important skill that business analysis professionals will use in this new world will be the ability to ask good questions. Maybe he said great questions, but that's really so it does come back to understanding the problem that you're trying to solve as part of that mindset.
It's falling in love with the problem and making the user better at what they do. And with AI especially, what's so interesting, right, is that AI is less deterministic. We can't say if this, then this as concretely as more procedural languages and software. So there's a little bit of this, like, it's not quite deterministic. Now we can do some prompting and filtering and things to make sure we have the right data sets for the right purpose and train the models, et cetera. But at the same time, we really, really have to focus on a higher level user goal versus trying to control exactly the deterministic outcome of an exact piece of code. So that's where ethics comes in, because there's boundaries and scope we have to be within there, right? If we're saying we can't be deterministic about this round thing we're doing with AI, how do we make sure the boundaries are there for those ethical considerations? So it just becomes a much more ambiguous yet robust thing to analyze.
Yeah. And in the book, it's talking about how business is going to operate differently. So if you're looking at how you're working your organization today and how it will work for in the future, I think it's a really good read to sort of get an idea of how this might work.
If there is someone that's
going through this type of transition, we'd love to hear from you. Because I think, Angela, it'd be great to actually see some people and some of the challenges they're going through. Maybe something we can build upon.
Yeah, Scott, what you're mentioning reminds me of something we hadn't mentioned about the book yet, is that the beginning of every chapter is a vignette, a fictional vignette. And it's kind of a fun way of introducing each chapter where we're imagining a BA far into the future in the vignette. And then we're unpacking what that means in each chapter and how we're going to get there and why this is the future. So it's kind of a fun way that we've brought a little bit of fiction into the book and make it fun with the characters.
Yeah, it definitely adds richness.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's because even the questions that we've had today are around, give me examples. What does that look like? I think you guys do a great job in here of not just using the vignettes, but also, you know, you guys talk about what analysis looks like today, what it would look like in the future. And so there's tables, kind of the before and after, that are all through here, which would give you more concrete examples. And I know that will be, you'll sprinkle that into the webinars that you're going to be doing for IIBA throughout this year. So if you're wanting those examples, that's a great way to get more into that, or get the book. I think it's a really good read. It's not overly technical or complex. So get your book.
Yeah, for sure. Congratulations, Angela, on a successful book launch. This is an exciting book that I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of use out of. I know Tim, when he watches this, he'll be able to chime in as well in comments as this gets shared around social media. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for your time and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Angela. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
All right. And so that wraps it up for today, but we're going to be coming back in 2 weeks and we're going to be talking about the global state of business analysis. It's a survey that we do, and this year we're doing things a little bit differently. We are going to be talking with Enno Eka and we're going to be unpacking some of the results from the global state of business analysis in our next episode. That's in 2 weeks. We look forward to seeing you then. Bye-bye. This is the end of our live session, but if you've got questions, you can send us an email at live@iiba.org or leave us a voice message and we'll answer your question at one of our upcoming broadcasts. Join us.